For podcast articles and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
Power Punch. Get charged up on the truth. Now, Power Punch with Larry Behrens on Newstalk STL.
Oh, good afternoon to you. So glad you've joined us for another action-packed episode of Power Punch. That's right. I go for alliteration. Power Punch packed with power. Okay, I'll work on it. We'll workshop it. You've stumbled onto the greatest show where we talk about all the energy needs and all the politics that goes along with it. You filled up your gas tank. You've shopped at the grocery store. You know that power is all important. My name is Larry Behrens. I'm communications director for an organization called Power the Future. Check us out, powerthefuture.com. And you got me on this Saturday. I got to tell you, already cranked up. And I can't even blame you for it. I can't. I mean, I will. But I shouldn't really. I walked in kind of cranked up today. And I'll tell you why. It was a debate where I can't think of the right way to describe it. I mean, tripping over yourself doesn't describe it. Cutting off your nose to spite your face doesn't describe it. Those things are child's play compared to the bumbling that had the debate. And I'm not talking about the whole thing. I'm not going to cast blame on any moderators or any candidates or anything like that. Well, maybe a little, but still, here's my thing that gets me cranked up. And yeah, I'm going to go right into it. We don't have a lot of time. I don't have time for pleasantries. Hope you're doing well. Hope you're staying cool, but let's get into it. You know, one of the first questions, if not the first question that was asked via video, and this is what grinds my gears, is this student-looking kid. I don't know if he's a student, but he's with some organization, and the name escapes me right now. And they do that thing like they do all the time. They say, let's go to the question from so-and-so, Joy McSkippy, and he's going to ask his question. And he starts his question at the first Republican debate, and it's along the lines of, me and many others are concerned about climate change. What you going to do about it? And I just about fell out of my chair. I just about lost it. I yelled at my TV. My dog hasn't spoken to me since. And I'll tell you why. We have a problem here on the right. We have a big problem. We have a problem where we take the words of the left, where we take the narratives of the left, and we try to pretend because we want to look like the rational, logical people. And we'll say, we'll use their words and try to meet them on the middle ground. And there is just no doing it. Let me just cut to the chase. I can build it up. I can build a little word puzzle for you so that you think, oh, wow, that's really interesting. No, let me just cut to the chase on it. There's no meeting on the middle ground. And then we see the moderators try to ask the question. Governor DeSantis, you know, short-circuited that a bit. And you have one candidate, to his credit, saying, listen, I'm not bought and paid for. And this is a complete hoax. In fact, the anti-carbon agenda is a wet blanket on the United States economy. I think wet blanket's being generous. If I was a wet blanket industry, I'd probably sue. But that's what has happened. And we start to use their words and their language, and we say, you know what, we're going to do it so we appear rational, so that we get that love on CNN, so that when we go on Meet the Depressed, yeah, that's right, Rush, I'll steal it, I love it. When we go on Meet the Depressed, we seem like, you know, they'll be our friends. Let me clue you in. They will never be your friend. They will never be on your side. And that's not who you want to talk to anyway. You know why? Because the people you want to talk to don't have that agenda. The agenda they have is they want to feed their kids. They want to get rewarded for their work. And they want to embrace common sense. And that is not it. And so stop using their language. It was just right out of the bat. I start hollering at the TV. Why do we play their game? Why do we, you know, invite ourselves onto their field and we expect to win? It's like soccer, which nobody likes. Yeah, that's right. I'll take off the soccer people too. Look here, Commie Kickball. We're not going to play your game anymore. We have candidates who stand for what we believe, will stand in front of the boos, in front of the jeers of the elitists, and we will stand up because it is past time when we stop caring about people who will never support us, who will never meet us halfway, who never want to work with us in any other way other than when we are of no threat to them. We're done working with them. We need to talk to the strength of those who lift us up, and that is the American working family. Period. End of story. Oh, already into it, man. Oh, again, not your fault. Not your fault. I've been holding in that since Wednesday. You think that's easy? Probably not healthy. That's for sure. But here's what I wanted to get to a little bit this week, because speaking of the illogical left, because that's the only part of the left that exists, you know, trying to reach out to the logical left, I think that's like, you know, I mean, you can go search for all the unicorns you want. You can look up in the sky for dragons all you want, but you're not going to find them. And you're not going to find it anyone that's the logical left either. They want complete power and control. And when they achieve it, they're going to want even more. We've seen it. The insatiable appetite for what they will do. Remember when they cared about the poor? Well, they don't care about the poor when they're buying groceries or buying gas under Joe Biden. They don't care about the poor when it's come to time, when it comes time to buy that $66,000 EV. They don't care. They say they care about the poor. Remember when they said they cared about working families? How all of that has gone out the window. Everything they told you they've cared about, they never really cared about. And so why do we work with them? Why do we say to them, oh, let's just try to meet on the middle ground? There is no middle ground for them, and they will never meet us there. And by the way, their middle ground has shifted so far left that you have to question, you know, what surgery your kids need and what bathroom they can go in. That's the middle ground where they want to meet you? Don't play the game. Don't use their words. Don't accept their premise. Let's start standing up for it. And if someone comes to you and says, I'm a conservative, but I believe this, guess what? Then you're going to tell them, I disagree with you because I have to work in reality. I don't get to live in horse, fancy, fairy dust land. I have to work in reality. All right. I swear I wouldn't spend too long on that. I've already used up all the time I wanted on that and more, because what I really wanted to talk about this week is something that is interesting. Now, you and I both know that this week was the week of the mugshot, as it were, right? And you all know what I'm talking about. I'm not going to get too much into it. But we have the week of the mugshot, and we're going to get into that. We're going to get into who of Team Biden doesn't have a mugshot, and maybe why they need one. And it's not, I know who you're thinking right away, but we're going to save that for a little later. But what I want to talk about right now, when we talk about appeasement, when we talk about the craziness that the left is going to bring, and why I get so worked up when I see us embracing their language and their narratives in the climate debate, is when I look at what they want to do. And I'll tell you what they want to do. They want to declare a climate emergency. It's that simple. Joe Biden has said he said, I practically already did it, because he doesn't know which ones he has or hasn't declared. He needs, I don't know, Obama's secret red phone to tell him what he has or hasn't done. But he wants to declare a climate emergency. And what does that mean? Well, I'll tell you what it means. I'll tell you a whole lot of what that means when we talk about a climate emergency. But first, let's just be upfront about what it is. If you can go online, like I can, on the interwebs, as it were, there is an organization, they're called Energy Policy Advocates, and they did some interesting work. They sued the Biden administration for some emails. Now, this wasn't last week. This wasn't last month. This was last year. In fact, I think when Biden first came into office, they started suing for emails. Say, we want to know what you're talking about. It's tax dollars. We're paying for it. Tell us what you're talking about. And here's what they found. They found that the Biden administration, through, I believe, the State Department and the Department of Energy and our good friends at the EPA, give them a hug, have been talking about for over a year, starting in at least July of last year, declaring a climate emergency. In what goes into it. In emails uncovered by the group, they found a proposal for a climate emergency initiative. Oh, government loves that word. It's an initiative. They take the initiative. So let me ask you this real quick. If you have an emergency, house is on fire, legs bleeding, can't get the game on TV, all these critical emergencies. Do you wait a year to do something about it? Is it really an emergency if you can plan it, scheme it, and decide what to do behind closed doors for over a year? And all of a sudden it's a climate emergency? Do you know what's in the climate emergency? I don't know what's in it. But I have a pretty good idea. Why? Because we lived through their last emergency, did we not? And we see it creeping up again. So why don't you just go ahead and compare climate emergency to COVID emergency? First, let's get into how crazy they are. This is the governor of Washington, Washington the state, boys and girls. His name is Jay Inslee. He is the greenest of the green. He is all in. And here's what he was saying this week.
Because the fact of the matter is there's a beast at our door, and that's the beast of climate change. It seems like the whole world is on fire. We need to defend ourselves from climate change. We need to decarbonize our economy so these fires don't ravage us. There's not enough fire trucks in the world to protect us if we don't stop climate change.
That is what we are dealing with. That is what we are trying to bring some common sense, and it is just not going to ever filter into someone who talks like that. And so when they talk about a climate emergency, we know what Jay Inslee is going to do because he did it during COVID. And it may be hard for some folks who are hearing me now to understand just how insane it was. Let me just paint you a quick picture, real quick. You have COVID comes in and everyone wants to do the right thing. We all try to do the right thing. In the state I lived in at the time, which was not the free state of Missouri where I live now, it was insanity. My whole family could not go out together. We were a group too big. You could not go out with more than five people. My family could not be seen in public. They had tape over the playgrounds, guys. Don't you remember this? I remember in June 2020 coming through Missouri on vacation and kids were playing softball outside. And I thought I'd gone to another planet. I had been locked down so long and so difficulty just by June 2020 that it seemed like it was in a whole new world here. Now that's what they can do to us when it comes to a climate emergency. Do you remember online censorship? Of course you do. They did it for COVID. Why wouldn't they do it for a climate emergency? Mandatory lockdown? Sure. New emergency rules, right? You've had to stay in your house before. You've had to not, you know, go to the funeral of a loved one before. But make no mistake, the elite few will still be just fine. In fact, we get a little taste of that this week, thanks to Jesse Waters. And we're going to play a little clip of what he uncovered this week.
It's not just the Four Seasons. FEMA agents are also posting up at the Fairmont, Kea Lani, and Maui, where rooms range there from $1,300 to $4,500 a night. Biden's giving Maui fire victims $700, while his FEMA officials sleep at luxury resorts that cost more than that per night. But the five-star resorts 45 minutes away weren't the only options. FEMA officials could stay at the Days Inn, where you could get an oceanfront view for $250 a night. We confirmed it. Rooms are still available there. Now, when did FEMA develop this taste for the finer things in life? Because FEMA's administrator, Deanne Criswell, is complaining that they don't have enough money.
We're watching our disaster relief fund very closely. Our estimates do still stay that we may have a depletion of our fund now. I mean, this is a day-by-day monitoring of the situation. We will start to move some of our recovery projects and delay them until the next fiscal year.
Whoa, FEMA has a $25 billion budget. Now, Deanne, who gets paid $180,000 a year, is saying FEMA's close to running out of funds and they'll have to delay operations if Congress doesn't immediately send them billions of dollars. Now, if I were Deanne and I was trying to cut costs so that I wouldn't have to delay emergency operations, I might not have hundreds of my employees staying at $1,300 a night luxury hotels overlooking a city burnt to the ground with toddlers unaccounted for.
And that's it in a nutshell, isn't it? That is what we are up against. They are staying in luxury hotels while they go fight something that they said was caused by climate. You don't get a luxury hotel. If you've lost your home, you don't get anything like that. If you've lost loved ones, you don't get anything like that. But the bureaucrats that are there, yeah, they get that. They get all that and so much more, especially when they don't have to pay for it. And that's what I talk about. When I say climate emergency, this is what keeps me up a little bit at night, because I remember I had the opportunity in September of 2019 to go see a rally with President Trump. And I got to tell you, it was wild. It was fun. It was everything. If you ever been to one, it was fantastic. And I can tell you, the Democrats were freaking out. They're like, the economy's great. We don't really have anybody that's going to counter this. I mean, people have been experiencing things during the Trump administration that they've never experienced before. Affordable gas, affordable groceries. The economy's going gangbusters. Look at this unemployment. It is just fantastic. What are we going to do? Well, lockdowns were their answer. Was it not? And in holding hands with those lockdowns, and this would be holding hands in your climate emergency too, you don't need that gas-powered vehicle to go vote. In fact, you can. Why don't you just vote by mail? We'll have Grubhub come pick it up in an EV. That's what we'll do. We'll make justice on your ballot. We'll make sure it's okay. And you know what? If I had been saying these things 5 years ago, I mean, they would put me on tinfoil hat extreme, right? Cover spread. Tinfoil hat extreme. But we know that it's true. We lived through it. We saw them completely censor stories, not only about COVID, but about the president's son. Where's his mugshot? We saw them reach into every aspect of our lives, and they will do it again. Well, speaking of mugshots, this was the week of the mugshot coming up a little bit. We're going to talk about some of Biden's climate radicals and who has a mugshot and who doesn't. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Get more Power Punch at NewsTalkSTL.com. This is Power Punch with Larry Behrens on NewsTalk STL. For podcast articles and more, find us on NewsTalkSTL.com. Get charged up on the truth. You're listening to Power Punch with Larry Behrens on NewsTalk STL.
Oh, welcome back. You made it through the first segment. Are you cranked up like me? It's all right. That's okay. Embrace it. Lean into it. And never, ever, ever give in to them. Give in to their words. Give in to their appeasement. There is no logical left that will meet you halfway. Trust me on that. That's a recap of the first segment here. Well, first, I want to talk about, you know, it was an interesting week in terms of mugshots. And let's be clear about how the media narrative and now the legal narrative works with things, right? Does anybody in their right mind really think that if Donald Trump was not running to be president again, and if he wasn't leading in the polls, that they would be bringing these indictments? I mean, how much does the deep state fear him that they have to do this? It is absolutely insane. But let's just take, I mean, if you take a look at the mugshot that the left loves, I'm not going to sugarcoat that. It's a problem. I know some on the right are celebrating it and using it as a badge of honor, and that's great. But I also have to be honest when I think that is a signature moment of what the left will do to you. And that's why when I talk about don't even use their language, I mean, this is the ball game they're playing. They will throw their political opponents in jail. And meanwhile, we're happy to get retweets. Do they even call them tweets anymore? I don't know. But that's where it's at right now. Well, I started looking at, you know what? They're pretty happy with that mugshot. And let's take a look at some folks who I'm going to call them mugshot worthy. Let's call it that. Some in the Biden administration. And yes, I could start with the obvious. By the way, someone bought cocaine in the White House. Did you hear? Where's that mugshot? Yeah, I'm holding my breath too. I'm not going to start with the obvious, but I am going to go along a line that is, I think, really interesting here. Let's take a look at maybe this week's nomination for, or one of them, the first nomination. We've got more. First nomination for mugshot worthiness. This is our energy secretary, my energy secretary and yours, boys and girls. Her name is Jennifer Granholm, and this is what she said this week.
But really, to put it another way, there is no rational discussion of our energy future, which is not also about climate change. And there's no serious discussion about climate change, which is not also about energy.
That's right. No rational discussion of our energy future. That is where they are coming from. And that's why the debate got me so worked up when that little kiddo said, you know, we're scared of climate and what are you going to do about it? And it's like, these are supposed to be the people on our side. This is not working for us. And this is who you're up against. The people who will say there is no rational discussion of our energy future. So they're not even, if you have that opinion, then that is not their opinion. They're never going to let you in. They're never going to work with you, reach across the aisle. It will always be more. They got $369 billion in the Inflation Reduction Act. It will always be more. They will always, always want more until they have it all. And then they're going to want even a little extra more. Well, let me tell you about this. Speaking of mugshot worthy, we're going to get ourselves in trouble this week, boys and girls. So that was Energy Secretary Jennifer Granholm. And she's got, let's just say, a resume of success. If you define success as absolute failure, that's what she has. So before she was on Team Biden, she had a really interesting job. But even before that interesting job, she was governor of Michigan, I think reelected once and probably term limited out. And that may be how they do it up there. But it was interesting. She was going to make clean energy a key focus of the economic development strategy. Yay! And do you notice? That's what's happening right now. It's a key focus of economic development strategy. And to her point, it worked for her. She said that strategy, what found was that strategy did not prove to be fruitful. And what did she do? She had to sign the biggest tax hike in the history of Michigan. What? Why did she have to do that? Because the state lost 500,000 jobs under her tenure. For everyone who bought a home in Michigan, two people sold their home and left. Sound familiar? I mean, you got to give credit. She's a trendsetter. She was Gavin Newsom before Gavin Newsom was, you know, had the mass exodus out of California. This was her record in Michigan. And Joe Biden took a long look at that and said, hey, you're my kind of people. Come work for me. But there's a little gap there, right? She got out of office, I think, what, like 2010 or something? So she had a lot of time to do a lot of things. What was one of the things, boys and girls, that she decided to do? That tax race was huge, by the way. Was it like, oh my goodness. I won't throw the numbers at you, but they weren't fun. Anyway, in the meantime, she bought a bunch of stock. Bought a bunch of stock in green companies. A whole lot of stock. And how much stock, you're asking? I'll tell you. It is anywhere, it's up to $5 million because the disclosure agreements in Washington, they let you have a leeway of, well, if you have stock that's over a million, but less than 5 million, you could say, how much stock do you own in that company? Anywhere from 1 to 5 million. That's the big window. First of all, I hope to have that big window someday. Where somebody asks me, how much stock? You know, it could be 1 million, it could be 5. I've lost track. Well, that's what Jennifer Granholm did, but I'm sure she didn't lose track. So she owned 5 million stock in a company called Proterra. Say it with me. Not called Solyndra, but they're cousins, and you'll find out why in a little bit. She owned stock in a company called Proterra. What do they do? Well, I'll tell you what they do. You know buses? Like driving around buses, don't you? Well, it is turning buses into EVs. That's what she wanted. So she owned a ton of stock. No, again, I didn't know that the job of Michigan governor paid so well that you then had millions to invest in stock, but nonetheless, here we are. And she invested up to 5 million in Proterra, a company that designs and manufactures zero emission electric buses and trucks and provides battery electric buses and charging systems in several states, Virginia, Washington, hey, Jay Inslee, and California. That's what she did. And not only did she buy stock in the company, well, you can't, if you're, you know, a politician that is just in the tank for somebody, Then you go sit on the board. She sat on the board for the company. Again, I'm saying an ominous tone because I know the details that are coming, but up until now, okay. You know, not my cup of tea, but it's not mugshot worthy, right? Not yet, anyway. But lo and behold, in comes Joe Biden, 2021. He's looking for a Secretary of Energy. And he says, you know that lady that signed the biggest tax increase in history and lost all those jobs and everybody moved out? Let's hire her. What is that vetting process like anyway? I've had the privilege of being around some of that. And I can tell you the resume that says, oh, I was twice elected governor. I signed a huge tax increase. We lost a bunch of jobs and people were moving out. I don't think she leads with that on her LinkedIn, but it's not something that I would consider, worthy of hire. Let's just say it like that. Be generous. Joe Biden did, though. Yeah, Joe Biden and I would make a lot of different decisions. But he picked her to be his energy secretary pick back in January. So she then disclosed that she had millions of dollars of investments in corporate and private business interests, including millions in companies linked to the green energy industry. Isn't it nice? Now, let's just take a moment and appreciate why we don't engage with the left. Gather around, kids. I'm going to tell you why. Here's why we don't engage with the left, children, with their language and their words like they did at the debate the other night. Here you have someone who had millions in the green industry and then goes to work for government. Now imagine for a second, instead of green industry, if they worked for a massive oil company, a massive coal company, a massive nuclear company, and then they went to be energy secretary. What would the left do? You see, the rules never apply. It's never fair. The goalpost will always move for us and they will never be satisfied. So cut it out. But that's exactly what she did. She got hired for this job to be energy secretary after making millions in clean energy companies. And we talked about it last week, right? John Podesta was also consulting with green energy companies. Start to see why Joe Biden loves green energy so much. And so many of the people in his administration were making a ton of money from that. And now they were able to send some. We'll find. Okay. So anyway, the former two-term Michigan governor and her husband, this is my favorite part. I'm not going to mention her names, but they reported owning. This is a gap warning of transparency and information that I can't relate to. And if you can, congratulations. But they reported owning anywhere from $4.4 million up to $16.8 million worth of stock. Again, I wait for that day. Larry, how much money do you have in stock? You know, it could be 4.4, could be 16.8. I haven't checked since Tuesday. Sorry, I just have to just go back through my mind and question my life decisions real quick. But anyway, that's how much they said that they owned in corporate interest, those evil corporations. So they were very happy with that. And her biggest assets were, as I mentioned, were with Proterra, company that designs electric vehicle batteries, blah, 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 blah. So she super duper pinky swear promise that if she became energy secretary, she would divest from Proterra. Divest means she would just sell her stocks and or maybe put them in a blind trust. That's something where you still get to make money off of it, but you get to pretend that you're not. I guess that's how that works. And so she super duper pinky swore promised that she would do that. And she did, to her credit. But let's go through the timeline. So before this, she is on the board making the money. And Joe Biden says, hey, failure, come work for me. You're my kind of people. And she says, okay, I sure will. And then in April 2021, lo and behold, Joe Biden has an event with a little known EV company called Proterra. And he just showers praise on them, right? He says, they are getting us in the game. And he said they would end up owning the future. And that's what Joe Biden said about this company. Now, the time, I'm giving you the timing because that's important, right? So she is on the job January 2021. 3 months later is when this happens. She says to him, hey, Mr. President, if you want to have an event and really talk up a company, how about that one I work for and still own stock in? And he says, okay, sounds great. And that's exactly what they do. And then a month after that event, she sells her stock and rakes in a cool $1.6 million. What a great deal. How fantastic is that? You can get your boss, who happens to be president, hey, come to my company and talk it up and tell everyone it's great. Oh, lo and behold, the stock went up. Imagine how that works. Well, time to sell. Now is a good time to sell. Whew, cleaned house on that one. $1.6 million. That's the profit, boys and girls. That's not what that she owned. That was what she cleared with it. And keep in mind, that's on top of probably what they paid her to be on the board of directors before. And so that's where it is. But it gets a little better, just a little better for this. So just this last June, and that's what, oh, and she swore she was done, right? She's like, I said I'd divest, and I did, and I'm honest, and look at me. Yeah, you did it a month after you pumped up the stock by having the president visit there and talk up your little company. But okay, sure, you divested there. Well, fast forward, boys and girls, to June 2023. It was a Friday. And let me, you know, I'm sure you guys know this, but media lesson 101 is when you have a news story that you are embarrassed about, you dump it on a Friday afternoon. Why? People generally don't always listen to the TV on Friday night. And with the exception of this show, maybe not listen a whole lot to the radio. I'm sure they listen to the station all the time, but, you know, they don't pay as much attention as they do during the week. So you dump it on a Friday night. It's called the Friday news dump, right? So they Friday news dump that, oh, you know what? She had a little more stock. She had a little more stock in six different companies. We're not going to tell you which one, but it's another 120K. Sorry. And this was after she testified to Congress that she didn't own any more stock. And one of the places that her family owned stock was, say it with me, Ford Motor Company. And what did they do? Well, that was after the president had touted all the EV things going on at the Ford Motor Company. She boosted Ford projects while leading the energy department and maintained shares of the electric vehicle maker Proterra while the White House promoted the company. Here's the terrible cherry on top. Remember I told you earlier, Proterra and Solyndra are cousins? That means that they're related in not a good way because Proterra is now out of business, even with all the support, even with all the government subsidies and the millions and billions of dollars of our tax money that went to this failed company. They had to file for bankruptcy just earlier this month. Good thing Jennifer got out when she did. You know, and it's funny. I bet you for her next job interview, she'll say, you know what? This company was profitable when I was on the board of directors. I left and now they're in the hole. So what a cool sequence of events. I'm sure just coincidence. If you are energy secretary, you work for this company, own a ton of stock in this company, become energy secretary, use your boss to promote that company, cash out your stock, make a ton of money, but still keep a little, just don't tell anyone. And then finally cash out the little bit left. And then lo and behold, the company folds. There is no mugshot of Jennifer Granholm. There is a mugshot of Donald Trump. That is who we are playing with, boys and girls. That is who we are dealing with when we talk about what the left will do. They will do it right in front of our faces, flaunt it, and then they will take their political enemies and put them in jail if they can. A banana republic, if you can keep it. Benjamin Franklin didn't say that. Hey, we'll be back, hopefully a little more upbeat, right after this.
Made. Get more Power Punch with Larry Behrens at newstalkstl.com. This is Power Punch on Newstalk STL.
For podcast articles and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
This is Power Punch. Power Punch with Larry Behrens on Newstalk STL.
Welcome back. You are here for the last segment of Power Punch for the week. It's a glass half empty, glass half full situation. It's a glass half full, or at least, you know, one segment still full. So, you know, soak it up. Take it in. We're going to go through this together. We're going to make it through. And we're going to talk about more Biden administration officials that may be mugshot worthy this week when mugshots became so important. And keep in mind, when I see mugshot worthy, I'm judging that by common sense. And that means they'll probably never, ever see justice because common sense is never going to be applied to this and fairness will never be applied to it. But you know what? Let's just take a moment. It's you know, it's the weekend. We can dream a little. We can dream a little. Let me tell you about a bureaucrat you may not know. Let me tell a little story. Her name is Tracy Stone Manning, Stone-Manning. And she is head of BLM. Not that BLM, but close. It's called the Bureau of Land Management, and it's a little, it's not really little, but it's a section of the Department of Interior. So it's under Joe Biden, and it's one of those jobs that Joe Biden appoints, right? You get to pick, if you're the president, who goes there. And Joe Biden picked this woman called Tracy Stone Manning. Greenie to the core. Absolute leftist to the core. How greenie to the core is Tracy Stone Manning? Well, let me reach in and tell you about Tracy Stone Manning. And again, keep this in context of as we talk about those who are mugshot worthy and those who are not. In the late 1980s, Tracy Stone Manning, I believe, was a student, either a student or near associated with a university in Montana. Late 1980s. So, you know, dot matrix printers, no cell phones. I don't even think Seinfeld was on yet. It was a tough time. It was dark ages, kids. And she was a student. And she didn't like that they were going to cut down some trees to, I don't know, build houses for people. She just knew that she didn't like cutting down trees. And she made friends with people who didn't like trees being cut down. Birds of a feather? I don't know. Weirdos of a feather? I don't know. I'm sure there's a good saying in there. Go ahead and share it with me if you want. And she made friends with them. And they had this, call it novel, but in reality, it was absolute murderously dangerous idea. And it's one of those things when I say the words to you, you're going to think it's not real, that it's out of some like Law and Order episode, Law and Order, eco crazies. Dun, dun. And she conspired with a group to put metal spikes into the trees. Now, I know I don't have to explain because you guys are smart and you'll understand anyway, but let me just do it here in case Cori Bush is listening. When you put metal spikes into trees, those trees are then cut down. When they are processed, those spikes then can come into contact with mechanical equipment operated by human beings, whether it is a chainsaw, whether it is a large saw at a mill. And then those spikes can send shrapnel anywhere, not unlike a weapon. And it can kill and has killed and harm and has harmed innocent people who were just doing their job. Tracy Stone Manning did that. And, you know, I'll look up the letter here. I didn't bring it in today because the language she used, you can't say it on the radio. You can't. And so she is a person who sent a letter to the Forest Service on behalf of eco-terrorists. And you want to know how crazy this is? It is so crazy that even the Washington Post reported on it. That's how you know how crazy it is, if the Washington Post reported on it. But anyway, she went to the library, and let me see here some, if I can find the letter. You know what? You can look up online. Things I should have prepared for. Let me take a note. And it mentions words that you don't want mentioned on the radio, even to your kids. And it tells these guys to not go into the forest to cut down those trees. And it tells them a little bit of what will happen to them if they do. Now, let me get into the facts as the Biden administration wants you to know them. Tracy Stone Manning never spiked the tree herself. She just rented the computer from the school library, because back then, boys and girls, not everyone had a computer in their pocket. And she typed out the letter so that it would not be traced back to her. And then, because she's such an angel, she warned the people. So she was actually doing good. Did she call them terrible names? Yes, she did. But she warned them, so actually it was good. There are trees with spikes in them to this day in the American West, because Tracy Stone Manning friends did it, and she helped them send threatening letters to those who were going to cut down the trees. She did it in such a way that she did not want to get caught, because she rented a computer from the school library and then printed out and then did it so they wouldn't trace it back to her typewriter. And that is what she did. Joe Biden took one look at her and said, you know what? You're a fantastic choice for the Bureau of Land Management. And just so you know, the Bureau of Land Management is in charge of millions upon millions of acres of the American West. Whenever you see those stories, Joe Biden cuts off such and such acreage for oil and natural gas development and raises your gas prices. That's Tracy Stone Manning that does that. So the same person who worked with eco-terrorists is now head of the Bureau of Land Management, is now head of deciding what land gets productive use and what land does not. What do you think a tree spiker is going to do in that position? There is no mugshot of Tracy Stone Manning. There is a mugshot of Donald Trump. They are not playing by equal rules. They never will. Don't engage with them on a fair fight, because they, if they come to fight with you, it will never be fair. And don't try to do facts or logic or you know what, I'm going to be the rational one. No. No, that's not what they're doing. I mean, how many indictments, like 91 counts against the president just because he has the audacity to be better at the job than the guy that's there now? Now the tree spikers are mad. And the tree spikers are happy there's a mugshot. Tracy Stone Manning did not serve any time. I think I read that she cooperated with federal authorities once they found out it was her. Lo and behold, when you check the computer out of the library, anyway, neither here nor there. But she worked with tree spikers. She worked with eco-terrorists. And that's just the one time she was caught, too, right? She did all of that and gets a prime position as a Biden appointee for the director of the Bureau of Land Management. No mugshot. So I wanted to end on kind of a happy note today, and we're not close to the end. Don't pack up your stuff. Put that Mountain Dew down. You're not going anywhere. There's a story that is out of Sky News. I believe they're Australian. Not even close to the right accent. So the headline reads, and this is one of those cases where the environmentalists will never admit this, but common sense told you that was the case. Who here is a fan of paper straws? Oh, I see there, Tracy Stone Manning. No, you can't drive them into a tree. Paper straws. Can they use those on the cocaine in the White House? No, don't. That is not appropriate to say or ask. Paper straws are found to contain long-lasting and potentially toxic chemicals, according to a study. I can't even pronounce the words poly and perfluorocarbonyl substances. Hey, listen, third grade was the best 3 years of my life. Okay. If I can't pronounce the big words, it's really on your fault. It says they are long lasting and potentially destructive to human health over time. Were discovered in the majority of paper and bamboo, even the bamboo, not the pandas. Paper and bamboo straws tested. The straws were considered eco-friendly compared to their plastic counterparts, which have been banned in the United Kingdom since 2020. So you get rid of the paper straws, or excuse me, the plastic straws, evil. You just got to save the turtles. And you get these paper straws, and lo and behold, in order to make it so that fluid or other substances, I see you there, White House cocaine person. So that fluid or other substances can go through them, they have to coat them with potentially toxic chemicals for the paper straws. How many times, I can tell you, I went to a restaurant, it was not in this state, and they prided themselves on that fact that they would not give you a straw unless you asked for one. I asked for one, and she said, what we have available, bamboo and paper. And she was very proud, this waitress. She was very happy. She's like, we care about the environment around us. I'm like, really? Because, you know, that Volkswagen Bug, it's probably running out of 80 gallons of diesel since it was made in 1845. Anyway, so she was very proud of her paper straws and throwing them out there. But now it's found that they have potentially toxic chemicals in them. And that is this week's story about how the eco left. They just can't help themselves, can they? If it's not windmills killing whales in New Jersey, it's paper straws killing the rest of us. And I like to go towards the end laughing, because otherwise I'm going to just lose my mind. So it's not bad. Hey, have you heard that new show Power Punch? Yeah, the guy starts jacked up, but he finds a little bit of nirvana towards the end. Well, I'm going to share a little bit more because you know what? I am I'm pretty good at patting my own back. I'm exceptional at it. As a matter of fact, I even pat my own back about how good I am about patting my own back. That's exceptional. And last week I gave you a prediction. Did I not? I predicted that you would hear from eco-leftists about the heat wave this week and how your gas stove was at fault. And by golly, listen, as opposed to the climate projections that come with it from the PhDs, I'm proud to say my climate prediction came true, like 100%. And what just grace fell from the sky to come save my climate prediction? Was it AOC? No. Joe Biden? Uh-uh. He's sleeping. He's on the beach. It was none other than our very own Cori Bush. Let's give it up. Thank you. Thank you, Congresswoman. The gentle lady from Missouri tweeted this week that in the year she was born, there weren't as many days over 90 degrees. And now it's hot in August. You have to do something about climate right now. I mean, if you want climate, I'm not going to, you know, brag, but let's just be honest. If you want climate predictions that are going to come true, that's got to be a record. Within a week, that's got to be a record. And you know what? It's on the record and I'm proud of it. I'm proud of how much these people are predictable, but it's sad to see how much power they have. And so in that vein, I wanted to end today with just some brilliant folks. And you know, I know these are things that you all have probably heard before, but I wanted to take a moment and appreciate the science crowd. When they talk to you condescendingly, when they scare a kid like they did at the debate and say, climate change is really a worry for all of us, and what are we going to do? You have to have an understanding of the past that goes further than your most recent TikTok video. And I know all of you do. But I worry about the young people sometimes, my kids included. I mean, I'm not guiltless, right? If you had asked me what was on the front page a month ago, I'd probably say, I don't know, Hunter Biden was found to be doing something else illegal, so they had to indict Trump. That's probably what it was, but I couldn't tell you exactly. But if you look at what the climate cult has been preaching for 50 years now, it's half a century, boys and girls, 50 years. Of just abstract failure. And you have to ask yourself, why did we listen to these guys? Here's some of my favorite ones. Oh my gosh, this is great. So this is from 1969. I wasn't even born yet. And so we'll call it 1969 BL before Larry. The trouble with almost all environmental problems, this is Paul R. Ehrlich, a population biologist, didn't know there was such a thing, is that by the time we have enough evidence to convince people, you're dead. He says that we must realize that unless we are extremely lucky, everyone will disappear in a cloud of blue steam in 20 years. Well, 1989 was a pretty good year. I did not disappear in a cloud of blue steam. And that Time of the Cure concert doesn't count. And these are your betters. And you would think, oh yeah, but that was some crackpot guy back in 69 saying things. Paul Ehrlich, look him up. He works at Stanford. He was on 60 Minutes in January, where he talked about this exact same thing, how we need to act now. And how did 60 Minutes get around it? They said, yeah, he's made some predictions that were wrong. That's all. That was almost verbatim, the literal line that they said. He's made some predictions that got wrong. You are going to be exploded in blue steam in 20 years. These are the betters. Next one. Air pollution may obliterate the sun and cause a new ice age in the first third of the next century. This is 1970, by the way. The demands for cooling water will boil dry the entire flow of rivers and streams of the continental United States. We're all done for. This is what they say. That was courtesy of, let me see, James P. Lodge. I don't know where his PhD is from. It's from Hysteria U, I bet. I had them in my Sweet 16. It didn't work out. Hysteria U. And finally, let's see if we can go back. Oh, here's Paul again. Paul is wrong about so much. A year after he predicted we'd all be gone in blue steam by 1989, he said, the Earth does need saving. He predicts that the oceans will be as dead as Lake Erie in less than a decade. Dead oceans! America will be subject to water rationing by 1974 and food rationing by 1980. Well, congratulations. We made it. And I say that to you for fun, because it's really fun to point out their stupidity. But the other part, too, is you have to see when they tell you scientists agree. There is studies. These are the people they rely upon. This is the foundation for which they stand on to look down at you from their Tesla. Don't believe them. Don't engage in their words. Don't even, if they say, I'm not going to talk to you if you're not rational, and just say, good, then we don't have to worry about a terrible discussion. I'm going to go back and grill a burger, because that's what I love to do. Thanks so much for listening this week. It was so great to have you along. Listen, if you want to learn more, you can head to powerthefuture.com. That's where you can find our stuff. If you want to send me some hate email, send it away. Larry@powerthefuture.com. I can delete so fast. Larry@powerthefuture.com, @LarryBarons on Twitter, where we all have a lot of fun. I really do appreciate you joining us. Thanks to News Talk STL for having the program on. And you know what? Let's get crazy. What do you say we do it again next week? Stay cool.
Power Punch with Larry Barons on News Talk STL. For podcast articles and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.